At the end of our last reading, we mentioned that you might assume French leaders helped plan the liberation of their own country. But here's the surprising truth. France was deliberately kept out of the planning for D-Day. The country being saved wasn't invited to help plan its own rescue. When Nazi Germany conquered France in 1940, a French general named Charles de Gaulle escaped to London. From there, he broadcast radio messages back to France, urging his countrymen to resist the German occupation. His voice crackled over the airwaves, inspiring French people to keep fighting in secret ways, sabotaging German trains, gathering information, and waiting for the day of liberation. De Gaulle called his movement the Free French. He believed he was the legitimate voice of France, even though the country was controlled by the Nazis. He built up an army of French soldiers who had escaped and gathered in Britain, eventually reaching 40,000 to 50,000 fighters. These men were ready to help free their homeland. But here's the problem. Neither President Franklin Roosevelt of the United States nor Prime Minister Winston Churchill of Britain truly trusted de Gaulle or wanted him involved in their plans. When America entered World War II, something strange happened to the Free French. As de Gaulle himself bitterly noted, as soon as America entered the war, the Free French were eliminated from the Allied conferences. This wasn't an accident. When the major Allied nations signed the Declaration by United Nations against the Axis powers in 1942, a document promising to fight together until victory, France was not included. De Gaulle was not invited to Washington when other leaders met. The country being occupied, the country the Allies would eventually try to liberate, was simply left out. At the Casablanca Conference in 1943, Roosevelt finally met de Gaulle for the first time. The American president told the French general that he should not imagine he was the sole legitimate representative of the French people, since he hadn't been elected by anyone. De Gaulle had a sharp reply. Neither had Joan of Arc. Roosevelt held de Gaulle in barely disguised contempt. Churchill could see de Gaulle's value, but often found him difficult. The American government even considered replacing de Gaulle with a different French general, Henri Giraud, who had escaped from German captivity and was more willing to follow American orders. Part of the problem was that de Gaulle was fiercely proud. He refused to simply do whatever the Americans and British told him. He insisted that France, even though it had been conquered, still mattered. He demanded that France be treated as an equal partner, not as a defeated country that needed to be grateful for being rescued. To Roosevelt and some American officials, this pride was annoying. They felt that France had lost the war quickly in 1940 and would need to adjust to a new status in the world, meaning France would no longer be a great power. At the Yalta Conference later in the war, Soviet leader Joseph Stalin said bluntly that France should play little part in the control of Germany after the war, and that countries like Yugoslavia and Poland deserved more consideration than France. When D-Day finally came on June 6, 1944, the Free French were not part of the invasion planning. De Gaulle was informed about the operation at the last minute, not consulted as a partner, just told what was happening. Years later, de Gaulle refused to attend D-Day memorial ceremonies. He explained his feelings in blunt terms. The June 6th landings were an Anglo-Saxon affair from which France was excluded. They were determined to set themselves up in France as if it were enemy territory, just as they had just done in Italy and were about to do in Germany. De Gaulle went even further, describing the Normandy landing as the prelude to a second occupation of the country. In his view, American troops were not just liberators, they were also planning to control France. De Gaulle's fear wasn't paranoid. the Americans had actually made plans to impose a military government on France through something called AMGOT, the Allied Military Government of Occupied Territories. This was the same system they used in defeated enemy countries like Italy. France, in the American plan, would be treated not as a liberated ally, but as occupied territory under American control. De Gaulle fought back against this plan with stubborn determination. He ordered the French resistance, the brave men and women who had been secretly fighting the Germans inside France, to restore independent political structures throughout the country. He also convinced the Supreme Allied Commander, General Dwight Eisenhower, to allow free French forces and a resistance uprising to liberate Paris in late August 1944. When de Gaulle marched triumphantly down the famous Champs-Élysées Avenue after Paris was freed, he had won a victory not just over Germany, but over the American plan to control his country. This story reveals something uncomfortable about how even friends and allies can treat each other unfairly during difficult times. The United States and Britain did help liberate France from Nazi Germany. That's true. But they also wanted to control France afterward, and they excluded the French from planning their own liberation. De Gaulle never forgot this treatment. When he later became president of France, he pulled his country out of NATO's military command and insisted on building France's own nuclear weapons. He refused to let France become dependent on the United States. His experiences during World War II had taught him that even allies could have plans that weren't in France's best interest. Sometimes, powerful countries that do good things can also do unfair things at the same time. Understanding history means seeing both sides, the heroism of D-Day and the way France was pushed aside from planning it. The decisions about who would control post-war Europe weren't just made on the battlefield. They were made in corporate boardrooms too, including some surprising ones in America, where certain businessmen had been making money by helping Nazi Germany build up its military power before the war even started.